Hey guys, welcome to the Chris Stefanik Show. When I was with Dr. Peter Malinowski, we grabbed a handful of interviews, and this one's really going to hit home and help a lot of people. We dove into the topic of scrupulosity. Now, a lot of people see the spiritual life as a path of not doing certain things and avoiding certain sins. And if I don't do this, and I don't do that, and I don't do that, hey, suddenly I find myself in heaven. That's not how it works. Now, for some people who deal with an obsessive focus on what not to do, or over-focusing on mistakes they've made or sins they've committed and searching their souls, and did I do that wrong? Was I in sin here? Was I not in sin there? That could be a spiritual problem. For a lot more people who deal with that, it's often something that's connected with OCD. So we're going to dive into this and help you discern what's often underlying the problem of scrupulosity, whether you're dealing with this or someone you love is dealing with this, to help you be free. Before we dive into that topic, I like reading through the comments I get in YouTube, so be sure to comment and like and subscribe while you're at it. And I like to respond to some of them. There's one comment I've been getting repeatedly lately that I really need to respond to. I'm not going to read any of these specifically to you because they're often vile, but I've been interviewing a lot of priests. And I love our priests, all right? If you're a Catholic, hopefully you're with me in loving our good priests, and there are many of them. But I've gotten so many comments that instead of engaging the topic at hand and finding logical reasons to disagree, they want to discount the entire case that Father Spitzer made, for instance, that we have a soul, simply by saying, well, he's a Catholic priest, and those guys are guilty of pedophilia and abuse, and they need to deal with that if they're going to have any moral authority to talk to me about anything at all. And I've gotten this comment enough times for it to warrant a response right now. I'm going to give it to you right now, all right? Number one, guys, I want you to know who's more angry than you, if you're not a Catholic, about the priestly abuse situation that happened in the Catholic Church. You know who it is? Good priests. They're way more angry than you are about it, and devout Catholics like me. None of us are okay with it. We've not been silent about it. I've spoken out about it. Good priests like Father Spitzer would, without any problem at all, condemn one of his brother priests taking advantage of a child. Number two, I need to address this misperception that this is a uniquely Catholic problem or a uniquely priestly problem. Sexual abuse of children and of minors and people abusing their authority to sexually take advantage of someone is not a Catholic problem, it's a human problem. And this human problem is actually worse in many areas outside the Catholic Church. 4% of priests were credibly accused of abuse in the last half of the 20th century. 6% of school teachers in public schools were credibly accused of abuse in the last half of the 20th century. This is not a specifically Catholic problem. So when someone looks for a YouTube video of a priest and says, I'm not going to listen to anything that you're saying because Catholic priests abuse people, if you're not also looking for videos of school teachers and saying the same thing, you know what, guys? You are absolutely full of it. You don't care about kids and protecting kids. What you care about is finding an excuse to undermine the Catholic Church. And you're, I also think of this stat. This is really sad. In Native American communities on reservations, there's some reservations where over half of the women have experienced sexual abuse. Are you Googling to find a Native American male talking on YouTube and then commenting, I'm not going to listen to what you say until you deal with the abuse problem in your community? No, you're not, because if you did, you'd be an ignorant bigot, which you are if you're only dealing that with Catholic priests. Number three, there's the claim that Catholics have done nothing. Like, you shouldn't talk about anything until you've dealt with this issue. Okay, guys, I've been a part of the reform that's happened in the Catholic Church around this issue. Do I think enough has been done? No. Am I excusing any of this? Any of the things that have been done to cover up abuse in the past? Absolutely not. Again, even the cover-ups, though, that's not a Catholic problem only. There's countless incidences in public schools where teachers have been covered up and then transferred to other districts, just like Catholic priests had been. I can say, however, that so much has been done to protect our children in the Catholic Church setting. Dude, if you want to volunteer to serve chicken nuggets to kids at a retreat, you're going to have a background check done on you. All right, the amount of safe environment training that every Catholic who wants to volunteer in any capacity for young people has been put through. The amount of screening that's been added to our priests and to our seminaries. I can honestly say that today, there's about one credible abuse allegation per year in the Catholic Church. Compare those numbers with the Boy Scouts, with public schools, with any institution that's serving children. I'm going to say that today, it's probably safer to send your kids to a setting where there's a Catholic priest than almost any other setting where you might send children. That's just a fact. Now, even if these reforms haven't been done, and again, I'm not making excuses, guys. I'm more disgusted than the non-Catholic who's commenting on my video, hating the fact that any priest ever abused a child. This kind of thing hits very close to home for me. And maybe we'll go into that some other time. And in ways I think we could reform even better, right? I'm not excusing any of that stuff at all. However, right when this scandal broke and I couldn't quite make sense of it, there were people who were asking me, oh, how could you be a Catholic? Why don't you leave the church? I'll tell you my answer in one word. Judas. There's my answer. Judas was 8.5% of the first apostles, the first priests, the first bishops in the Catholic Church. 8.5% betrayed Jesus Christ and sold him out for silver. Why did the other apostles not leave? Why did all the disciples not leave Jesus on account of Judas? Why would I, 2,000 years later, not look at that 8.5% stat and say, gosh, how could I possibly be a follower of Jesus Christ? I'll tell you why. Because Judas isn't Jesus. That's why. And I've never gone to Mass and received Judas in Holy Communion. And I've never gone to Mass and received a priest or bishop who has betrayed Jesus by betraying the trust of children in communion. That's not why I'm in this thing. I'm in this thing for Jesus. And even if there's problems that have to be dealt with in the church, I'm going to be part of the solution because I'm in this for Jesus. So there's my response to all the people who watch me interview amazing priests who are some of the best men I've ever met, who are laying down their lives in the service of the church and who hate priestly abuse of children way more than anybody else, way more than you do. And you want to discount everything they're saying because of that? Well, that's what I got to say to you. With that, here's Dr. Peter Malinowski and me setting you free from scrupulosity. God bless you. Dr. Peter Malinowski, thank you so much for being with me again.
I am so glad to be here with you, Chris. It is an honor. It is a pleasure. I just love being on your show.
Praise God. We're going to dive into a pain point for a lot of people, scrupulosity.
Yeah.
A lot of people struggle profoundly with scrupulosity in their spiritual life. I'm always amazed at the pain tolerance level that some people have, that they keep putting up with it rather than just giving up their faith and giving up or giving up their moral life altogether. What is scrupulosity? Why does it hurt so bad?
You know, there's debate about that.
Yeah.
And I get into that a lot in episode 87 of my podcast, Interior Integration for Catholics, but let's sum it up real quick. There's two main camps. One, it's a spiritual problem. Two, it's a psychological problem. And unfortunately, there's not been a lot of great integrative work, okay, like that kind of looks at both. My belief is that OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, is really what undergirds scrupulosity. That's the way that I approach it. I approach it as really having its roots in the natural realm, but having some spiritual expression, some spiritual consequences.
Oh, so sadly, it's a big mix.
It's complicated. And, you know, I think a lot of the work that's been done around it hasn't actually been that great.
Okay.
Because I think we're not getting at the root.
Do you think it always proceeds from a neurological condition, from literal OCD?
So OCD isn't really a neurological condition in my
book.
Tell
me more.
All right. So now there can be, if you have a brain tumor, it's a particular part of the brain, it can express itself through obsessive or compulsive symptoms. But most of the time, this is what we call functional, which means it's psychological in its origin.
Mm.
I make the argument that scrupulosity is the son of anger and the grandson of shame. Scrupulosity is the son of anger and the grandson of shame.
Oh, dang. Okay.
All right. So
this is a very different
way of looking at it. But when I was working with folks that had scrupulosity as a clinical psychologist, what I would notice is that there was a really curious lack of anger toward the God that was being represented in the scrupulosity. All right. So what these guys were doing, it was primarily guys I worked with. And still work with.
Hence keeping the faith that makes you miserable.
That's right. So my question became, okay, why is it that these guys are worshiping a God that barely tolerates them, that has such a high standard that they can never meet it, where there's no mercy?
And they're angry about it.
And they're not angry about it.
So where's the anger going?
So where is the anger? This is like Sherlock Holmes and the dog that wasn't barking, right?
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
Why is this dog not barking? And so then what happens is that as I got a little deeper into this, no, there's a lot of hatred toward God, or at least toward the who they think God is. But that's so threatening that they're pushing it down. They're pushing it down, and they're trying to deny that they've got this anger and this, or even like little bits of dissatisfaction with God. They won't even admit that, right? It's so tightly polarized. And so then they're going to do more prayers, and they're going to do more spiritual practices, and they're going to do more and more to try to like contain that. And the pressure gets greater because now, you know, they're continuing to sacrifice themselves to an angry God. I mean, this really is not a Catholic impression of God. And why? Because ultimately below the anger is this deep sense of shame that they are not worthy of the love of God, which in some sense is true. We can't merit the love of God. We're not worthy of it, but that God wouldn't actually want to give them a free gift. So this is all layered in though to these obsessive kind of thoughts, these ruminative thoughts and these compulsive behaviors, which again are, if you understand this from a psychodynamic perspective, these are anxiety driven behaviors that attempt to ward off anger that would harm important relationships. In this case, the important relationship is just God.
Wow.
You know, it's the relationship with God. So when these folks could get more real in acknowledging intense emotions that are not fear, right? Because they can acknowledge fear, but folks that have obsessive compulsive disorder or folks that have scrupulosity, they have a very difficult time acknowledging most emotions. Mm. They can start getting in touch with their emotional life and they can say, look, you know, I'm hating an image of God that's been formed into me that's not who God is. That's the game changer
right
there.
Is it literally bad catechesis? I mean, I that's a great description, right? The end game is to win not even the approval or love, but the tolerance of a God who barely likes me.
And who wants to go to heaven with a God like that, to be you know, in the presence of somebody that barely tolerates you?
But is it, right, and better than hell, I guess, right? But maybe, because that sounds like hell to be in the presence of a God.
Well,
who doesn't
and if you
like
look
me.
At what they're doing, they're actually not trying to enter into a beatific vision of God. They're not seeking a deep union with God. They're seeking that God not hate them, right? They've projected their own hatred at God onto God. So it's not that they hate God, it's that God hates them.
Is that from a lot of bad catechesis? Is that
this doesn't have that much to do with catechesis, I don't think.
Okay.
I mean, because when you talk with folks that are obsessive compulsive and are scrupulous, they can give you great catechism types of answers about the love of God. You know, it comes from a lack of awareness, and it comes from a lack of a sort of a connection with their own humanity. This is a human formation issue primarily. Mm. It has spiritual consequences because, you know, I really look at human formation as like the foundation for all formation. That's straight out of Pope St. John Paul II, Pastores Deo Vobis. Human formation is the basis for all, he says priestly formation, but it's true for everybody. Yeah. And so if you can correct these things at that foundational level, it makes it so much easier. You know what? And so one of the things you can begin to do is say, well, what would it be like if you were to share with God that you had these feelings, you know, that you had these ideas about him? And because they're so sealed off from God, they're not actually relating with God. They're trying to meet some kind of impression of a code or a set of standards that if they get that, they will earn the love of God. They wouldn't say it that way, but that's with the function. If I only can get to this point, if I can only achieve this level of perfection or this level of, then God will smile upon me. Right? It's a very conditional, very transactional way of relating with God. And so it's tragic when this, you know, gets carried to an extreme. And the answer is, again, goes back to St. John. God loved you first. Mm. God loved you first. Mm. This is not something that registers on an emotional level. Some of this, the etiology of it is really not really known, like where it comes from, you know? But the cure for it is, again, goes back to what we've talked about already in some of these previous episodes. And that is, can they tolerate who they are as they are, and can they tolerate God loving them in that place?
The cure is the gospel. The cure is the gospel. And it's a simple but very difficult thing to actually accept.
it's right? Because again, they would have to totally, fundamentally change their paradigm of how they interact with
there's
God.
There's entire swaths of Catholic culture that are taken up in this, that maybe are driven by spiritual, powerful leaders who have been driven by interior scrupulosity and OCD,
right.
But it's led to movements like Jansenism and Pelagianism, right? This is not just splitting hairs. I mean, there's people who maybe aren't that far gone into these heresies. I just Google them, okay?
Right.
But whose approach to Catholicism is, well, this is the religion about me doing good things, checking off boxes, and earning the love of God. No, this is about you doing these things because he loved you first.
Right.
And that's not splitting hairs. These are two literally different religions.
Two different religions. I argue that that all of us have multiple heretical religions within us. Heretical religions within us that often reside in the unconscious, wow. And that the way to deal with those religions is not to suppress them, but to try to bring that up within us, to try to make the unconscious conscious and kind of see what are the goods that we're actually seeking. So in this case, the scrupulosity is driven by oftentimes an attempt to placate an angry God.
Yeah.
All right.
And you could see a lot of Catholics from a mile away and think that that's the way you're going about the Catholic thing is a different faith.
It's a different faith. It looks like the faith of the Aztecs in Quetzalcoatl, right? Because what it involves is human sacrifice to an angry God.
Huh.
That's what folks that are scrupulous, that have high degrees of scrupulosity, that's what they're trying to do.
Sad.
And so, but they're not asking God if that's what he wants. And so the answer to this, and there's been manuals that have come out over the centuries about how to deal with scrupulosity. It's been a problem that's been noted even going back to the Greeks. I talk about this in episode 87 of my podcast, Interior Integration for Catholics. So this is not...
Plug. Go look at it. It's awesome.
What the answer is to be in relationship. It's not about the doing. It's about the being. And it's about, can we be humble enough in our woundedness, in our imperfections, in our sinfulness? Can we be like those little children that were messy, that were untidy, that were loud, that were ill-behaved or whatever? Can we accept the invitation into the love of God? The folks that have scrupulosity look at the spiritual life largely through the prism of rules. They look at sin as breaking the rules, all right, as breaking the rules. And that is a legitimate way to look at sin, okay? Right, right. But you can also look at sin as the harming of relationship.
Yeah.
You can look at sin as, how am I refusing the love of God? Or how am I refusing to love God, right? If we're really wrapped up in our own imperfections and sinfulness and our scrupulosity, then we're not actually looking in the eyes of our Savior. And no wonder the wind and the waves look so big. No wonder we can't walk on the water.
What do you say to the person who would respond with, well, I believe in Catholic doctrine, hell is objectively terrifying. I can jump off a cliff into hell by my actions. Why should I not be terrified all the time? Why should my spiritual life not be dominated by, don't do this, don't do that?
Because I would say, where does it lead you? Where does it lead you? Has it led you into a deeper relationship with God? What's the fruit? But most of the time, I don't answer those kind of questions.
Okay.
I don't, because then I'm playing on that field. Then I'm entering into that paradigm. Right? And I don't think that there's a good spot on that field to be. So what I try to do is to just be with them and to let them experience me loving them in their brokenness, in their woundedness. And then I have done this. So you think that actually, I've said this in therapy several times, you think I'm better than God. You think I'm more accepting of you and more loving of you than God is.
But that's awesome. What a way to own your power as an individual who communicates in your presence the love of the Father. That's awesome, because people, again, we underestimate our power. You actually have that kind of power. As a dad, as an uncle, as a friend, as a psychiatrist, whatever it is you are, you could bring that. That is awesome. This is a mysterious thing to me. I've often thought about this. The Catholics who actually have that teaching about mortal sin, hell, this, you'd think that would lead to a terrified lifestyle. And yet it's the Catholic countries that have learned leisure, perfected wine, like celebration, music and dance. And then it's these Calvinist cultures that think, well, you say a sinner's prayer, you're saved forever. Nothing you could do can lose your salvation. And they're teaching fire and brimstone 10 times more than any Catholic. Like, I don't know how that fits together. I don't really get it.
There's really one thing that will lead you into hell. Mm. And that's despair. Mm. You know, the unforgivable sin is blaspheming against the Holy Spirit, right? Denying the love of God.
Denying his power to forgive me and save me.
Yeah, and so, yeah. And the tragic part and the ironic part of scrupulosity is that it can lead people to despair. Mm. There can be people that say, you know what? It's too hard. Mm. And they're going to give up. Or their God image, the sort of impressions that they have of God, the way they sense God to be in their bones, which is all distorted, they begin to own that. This is not a God worth worshiping.
Here's a serious problem that people who struggle with scrupulosity will face. It's something you frequently need some counseling for, to work through some underlying issues, right? But most people go to a counselor, and it's hard to find Dr. Peters out there. It's hard to find counselors who are coming from a Christian worldview, from a Catholic worldview. A lot of times you might find a counselor coming from a literal hedonist worldview, that the end goal of counseling is to increase your pleasure and decrease your pain, and that's the recipe for a happy life. And they'll receive a person who's scrupulous, and the only thing they know to do, even though counselors all say, well, I'm not going to impose my worldview on you. Yeah, right. The only thing they'll know to do is say, get rid of that Catholic faith. It's got you miserable. You believe in hell? You know, that's got to be, well, the solution is get rid of it. What do you do? I mean, what does someone do if they're living in, you know, New York City somewhere, they don't know where to find a Catholic counselor, and they just can't seem to get out of the cycle?
So the first thing is to remember that God has a plan. Before time began, God knew you were going to have this problem. And the only reason he allowed you
to remember, I want to sit on that for a second.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the only reason he allowed you to have that problem is because he was going to draw greater good from it than if you didn't have it.
We think our problems are the sign that God has abandoned us. It's literally God saying, here's a 20-pound weight, do a bunch of curls because your bicep's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So can we trust that there is a way? That God has, before time began, anticipated all these circumstances, knew exactly where you were going to be, and has a plan for you. Then we can look for the plan as opposed to fretting about what are we going to do. So again, this goes back to, I'm gonna recommend. So I'm stepping out of my role as a psychologist a little bit here, but I'm stepping into my role as a Catholic, right?
Good.
And that is to pray for faith, right? To pray that you will have that trust in God, right? So, you know, the father of the boy that was, you know, throwing himself into the fire and so forth said, yeah, I do believe, help my unbelief, right? And so to trust that, and this is hard again, if you're the one in the scrupulous position because of the God image things, right? But can we muster that up and say those words, and can we actually put some heart into that? And trust that we're going to get a response, you know, trust that actually God's going to hear that prayer and then be open, because most OCD remits on its own. Most scrupulosity will remit on its own without, and what I mean by that is without professional intervention.
Wow.
And a lot of scrupulosity happens in sort of brief periods of time. It's a reactive thing. I experienced that in high school. I went through 2 weeks, only 2 weeks, but I went through 2 weeks of scrupulosity, and they were,
they're
really difficult, really difficult.
You know, I love the thought that it remits on its own, and for the person who's in it, who feels like they're never going to get through it, don't engage that part of you that wants to act on it's really helpful to hear scrupulosity, expression of OCD, because one of my kids struggles with OCD, and it's it's painful as a parent to see the pain that he's in. And yet there's a beauty coming out of this kid and a humility because of the OCD. But there was one time he was like, I'm stuck in this thought cycle, Dad, and started telling me about it. And then I started explaining why the thought cycle was wrong to help him reason his way out of it. He's like, no, you don't understand. I can't talk to the thought.
Right.
If I talk to the thought, I give it power.
Right.
I have to take the thought and just put it over here and just realize that's not me. It's just a thought. I'm like, dude, this kid is so much more psychologically advanced than I am at the age of, 17 because of the struggle. So if you're struggling with scrupulosity, don't engage that. Like you'll want to bless yourself 50 times in a given day. Don't do it. Do practice your faith. But don't give in to what you know is torturing you.
So I would nuance that.
Yeah.
Let me say this. I would go back to what is the need?
Mm.
I would listen to the thought in the sense of saying, okay, what need is driving this thought?
Mm.
Right? I need to feel safe. I need to become good enough so that I'm in God's good graces. I need to know I'm not in mortal sin. Okay. Mm. And then I would say, okay, is there another way we can meet the need? Would it be possible to ask God if we're in mortal sin? Would it be possible to write a poem to God about how we love him?
It's awesome.
Is that possible? Would that be possible for somebody who is in mortal sin or who is as destitute or as, whatever the impression is of oneself? Like, can we break the set? Right? So I agree with you on that.
No, you're not inside of it. You're going outside.
That's right.
To what's
I'm changing the battleground, right? Mm. Because if all I'm doing is suppressing the thought,
I'm still on that
same playing field.
Yeah, you're only halfway there.
Right. I want to get off of that field altogether.
Wow.
Right. Right.
That's powerful. How can I be there as a friend of someone who's falling into that?
So what I would do is, first of all, obviously you want to pray, right?
Yeah.
You want to pray for them. But you also want to convey to him, and it might not be in words, but that he can be angry with you.
Ooh, I love that. I didn't think that was coming.
Like that he could be, he could express his sense of inadequacy or shame around you. And that could bring you closer together.
Mm.
You could share your struggles with anger with him or your struggles with shame and model for him that this can be okay.
Mm.
That we don't have to engage in frantic efforts. You wouldn't say it this way, but we don't have to engage in frantic efforts to tolerate being, to get to the point where God will tolerate us.
Mm.
Right? In other words, can you embody Jesus?
Mm.
Can you be an alter Christus ipse Christus for your friend?
Mm. How beautiful. I want to land on this word of hope because I love how you said, like, God has always known this would be your struggle, right? And again, he allows struggles to bring out a particular good in us, to bring out a particular strength in us that's actually more shining and stellar and awesome than most people. What good and beauty do you see come out of people who have walked through scrupulosity and to the other side?
So the real gift there is that they have wrestled with God.
Huh.
They chose to wrestle with God.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is they've gotten to the point where they could repudiate their God image. And they got curious about who God really is. And they got open and humble enough to allow God to show them who he really is.
Wow.
And then they got to taste and see the goodness of the Lord. And it wasn't just by faith that they knew him.
Mm, they weren't just interacting with their mental phantasm of God, but actually breaking through to the cloud of unknowing, right? To stay there with the Lord. Wow, makes me cry. One of my dear friends dealt with profound scrupulosity and OCD in college. And you might be watching right now, but you're a hero of mine. But he was tortured. Mm-hmm. Tortured, and it grew. I mean, I was at Franciscan University of Steubenville, very pious, devout campus, beautiful, incredible place. But within any Catholic culture, this stuff can go on for a while before anybody realizes, whoa, there's a problem, because it expresses as piety. But his piety was torturing him. He literally had to count the number of times a day he blessed himself and all this stuff. On the other side of that, and he got some meds to help with OCD and just learn how to manage that. On the other side of that, I'm telling you, this guy has a gentleness that is unlike any that I've ever seen in anybody else. And it's not despite what he went through. It's literally precisely because of it. So there's again, do not feel abandoned by God if you're struggling with this. You and God have got this together. And on the other side of it is an incredible saint, insert your name here, not despite, but because of the trials. Yeah, thanks for walking with so many people through these kinds of trials, Dr. Peter. God bless
you, man. So good to be with you, Chris.
Tell us one more time, if people want to dive into hours long on this with you, where do they find it?
Definitely. So Interior Integration for Catholics, that's my podcast. You can pick it up wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes 85, that's about perfectionism. Episode 86 is about OCD. And episode 87 is titled Scrupulosity When OCD Gets Religion. So I checked those out.
Wow, what a cool title.
And check out soulsandhearts.com. That's our online outreach where we bring the best of human formation resources, psychological resources to the world. We've got communities, we've got blogs, we've got podcasts, we've got courses, free courses. You mentioned finding a therapist. We've got a whole free 90-minute video course called A Catholic's Guide to Finding a Therapist.
Oh, wow. So you interview questions for a therapist.
We actually do that. We've got a module that's how to interview a therapist. Absolutely.
Don't be afraid to do that. You're paying, okay?
Absolutely.
This is not your buddy. It's someone who you're paying for a service.
That's right.
That's really helpful. Sorry, yeah. I don't want to land this plane, but what do you ask a therapist that you're listen to the podcast? But give me that in 2 minutes.
So it's not so much about what you ask.
Yeah.
But if you have the sense that the therapist sees you, hears you, knows you, and understands you, like that should become clear within a couple of sessions. It can become clear if it's not the case in a phone call.
Okay.
So don't hesitate to ask the hardest questions to your therapist, to give them the real curveballs.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're considering seeing a therapist who's not Catholic, I would ask a question like this: like, when's the last time you made a joke that put Catholics in a bad light? Don't ask them if they've got a bias against Catholics, because a lot of times they won't be aware of their own biases. But say, for example, have you joked, you know, when was the last time you made a joke about Catholics that put Catholics in a bad light?
Wow. So you don't have to go to your therapist thinking, I'm a Catholic, I hope that he's okay with that. No.
Right.
You have to be okay with your therapist for the
job. Yeah, and then
we also
you can go to, again, I'm not affiliated with CatholicTherapist.com, but you can go to CatholicTherapist.com. They've got Catholic therapists all over the country. You can check that out. But I would also say, don't just go to a therapist because the therapist identifies as Catholic or is Catholic, because there are some Catholic therapists that are substandard.
I'm just going to
tell you that right off the bat. Yeah. And some that would exacerbate the scrupulosity.
Yeah.
So you want to be really thoughtful about that.
Now we'll land the plane for real. Thank you so much, man.
It's good to be with you, Chris. All right.
Thanks, man.
Hey guys, thanks for watching. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share, and show the love. Support us in the link under this show. We have a whole new thing we've released where you can get access to more stuff from us. Sign up for our courses. But it's not just about the stuff you're getting. This is how you keep this ministry going. So please be generous. Please support. God bless you. See you next time.